I'm Sky Cooley.
And I'm Andrew Abernathy. And welcome to the Oddfellows Podcast, a podcast where we talk about transdisciplinary research and what it means at OSU and beyond.
All right, Andrew, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, Sky. How you doing?
Pretty good. So costume, what are the Abernathys going to dress up as?
Well, you know, in the Abernathy household, we have a nasty habit of changing our Halloween outfit over and over and over again. But I'm told that my son, Abe, is going to be a hot dog. So my current plan is to get on Amazon and Google a mustard bottle.
I was going to ask you, it's just going to be a big bottle of mustard.
Mustard. Definitely not ketchup. That would be a travesty. No. It definitely has to be mustard on a hot dog.
Or
hot
relish.
Take. Yeah, relish is fine too, but not ketchup. Hot take, I know. Feel free to disagree with me. Well, what about in the Cooley house?
You know, Indy always, she'll want to dress up as a pig sometimes. She'll do princess stuff, kind of classic little girl stuff. But I think I'm just going to go as a wizard, man. And, you know, just classic. I'll get a big hat and grab a wand or something and just kind of walk around.
You know, that's not even that weird for you.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, it's just my my regular look, man. Well, jumping into things, so talking a little bit about the new Connect magazine came out, had a little feature for Dean Crow. So if you haven't checked that out, just to learn a little bit more about our new dean. Also saw Caitlin Barnes in there, had some cool research projects. And then we got featured in the SMSC for some of our study abroad trips. If you've got students that are considering a study abroad, check out the Connect magazine.
We being SMSC?
SMSC, or? Yeah, yes. Yeah. Myself, Karen Christian, Asia Cooley. We have continued to take in spring break trips and one summer trip, students to Scotland. We've gone to Austria. We've gone to Greece. And it's a lot of fun. We produced the Through an Orange Lens magazine, and you can read up a little bit about that in the Connect magazine. Also want to point out Rachel Eaton's newsletter and the Catalyst. You should be getting that in your inbox. And that's got a lot of great information for if you're looking, you know, internal deadlines for proposals, internal funding, a lot of really cool projects that you can get involved in, external grant funding, some team opportunities there. And then the one thing, Andrew, have you heard of Pivot before? Do you know what that is?
I have no idea what Pivot is.
Okay, cool. So Pivot is a new platform that curates funding opportunities, and it does so literally based off of keywords. So you can put in a specialty, you can put in, you know, a topic of interest, you can put in almost anything, and it's human curated. It uses AI and a human curation, and so you get a really fantastic list of all the different funding opportunities that are available based off of the keywords that you put in. You can sort filter it based off of, you know, when the RFP came out. You can sort filter it by, you know, when the proposals are due. You can sort filter it by the amount of funding. You can sort filter it by, like, those looking for transdisciplinary teams. So we've got now on the CAST leadership side, we've got a pilot test of this. It's the second pilot test that we've done of it. It's really a fantastic system. And there are rumors, or at least people have been talking about the fact that we might get this as university faculty to help us with all of our research. And should that happen, I know that Dr. Knapp and other folks in CAST leadership, we've been talking about doing these transdisciplinary research workshops, putting together shifts just to show people, you know, how to iterate with artificial intelligence tools, how to build out transdisciplinary research teams, and then also how to use this Pivot platform and sort of incorporating all those elements to build efficient, impact-focused, you know, transdisciplinary teams. And so that's something I want to put on folks' radar who are listening to the podcast. If you are interested in learning how to iterate with AI, if you're interested in learning how to look for funding using some of these new tools that are out there, we'll be having some workshops coming up either at the very end of this semester, maybe early in the spring, that we'll be queuing you in on.
All right.
Cool.
All right. And just a quick thing to mark your calendars for today. We are going to be speaking with Dr. Jennifer Borland from the OSU Center for Humanities, which is sponsoring an event on Wednesday, November 20th, 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the OSU Library. We're going to have an event called Fostering Collaboration in the Public Humanities with Dr. Elia Reyes Santos. Santos is the director of the Pacific Northwest Just Futures Institute for Racial and Climate Justice. And she's going to be sharing her experiences and strategies for collaboration in humanities research with a special focus on public humanities. Now, we are minutes away from our interview with Jennifer, who's nice to join us today. Dr. Borland is the director of the OSU Center for the Humanities, a professor of art history, and I believe a medieval historian.
That's correct. That's
yes.
Correct.
All right, so let's get into it with Dr. Jennifer Borland.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, we are here with Jennifer Borland, the director of the OSU Center for Humanities. How are you doing, Jennifer?
I'm well. Thank you.
Well, we're so glad you are going to be here today. So this will be coming out right around Halloween. I want to know, do you have your costume planned?
I do not have a costume planned.
Are you a dress up for Halloween kind of person?
I am a chaperone the child kind of person. So there was one year where she was a flight attendant, and we were just random people on the plane. And so, I just had like a neck brace. Neck pillow and like the glass from, one of the other flights that we had taken. And some of those cookies in my pocket.
Biscoff. Just hand cookies. Those out. You gotta have them.
I love those.
Really good. So anyway, but nothing is planned yet for this year. I think this might be the first year she's ready to go off on her own and not be with her parents. And then I might just hang out at the house. I don't know. We haven't quite figured it out yet.
That sounds excellent.
Yeah. So just go out and go get
kids,
candy.
Go.
Yeah, go.
Well, that's the way we did it when I was kids. So I don't know. It's a different world.
It is. Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, Jennifer, we're going to start with our first question. Tell us a little bit about you, your background, as well as your research and teaching interests.
All right. So I am a professor of art history. I teach in the Department of Art, Graphic Design, and Art History here at OSU. And so my background is in art history. I have all art history degrees. I wanted to be an art historian very early in my life. And I am specifically a specialist in medieval Europe. So I deal with the visual and material culture of the Middle Ages. My research has been kind of in a lot of kind of all over the place. I've done a lot of different things, but the most recent big project was a book that came out a couple of years ago on the visual culture of medicine in the late Middle Ages. And I often kind of work in an area that merges art or visual culture, medicine, and gender, women's studies, kind of all those things together. So I think, yeah. Those are sort of the areas that I've been working on, and then new things come along as well. So yeah. I've got some other things planned in the future.
So you said you wanted to be an art historian from an early age. Yeah. Was there like a? Do you know how old you were when you were like, I want to be an art historian?
I think that I knew I wanted to study art history in about ninth grade, and partly going to museums and realizing at some point that my own artistic activities were not particularly good, and it was way more fun to study the good artists rather than try to be one myself when I was not very successful. So there was something about like realizing that there's a career in which you get to study art instead of trying badly to do it was really like that clicked.
Well, I saw some accolades of the book, and congratulations on it. And some
oh,
of the
you.
Pictures that you were looking at, like sort of in the margins of text, really. Mm-hmm. Both some of them were humorous looking, but also like really insightful that you're able mm-hmm. to glean so much from those images in the margins like that.
Yes,
really fascinating.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So yeah, the specific manuscripts that the book was about involve these smaller, actually historiated initials. So they're a little initial at the beginning of each chapter mm-hmm. with a little scene that's kind of foreshadowing what that chapter is going to be about. They're focused on things like vomiting, bloodletting. Selecting a wet nurse, all kinds of different topics that would be required to know for kind of managing household health. So, yeah, it's really fun stuff.
Yeah, it was really intense. It was like a medical book of Kells is what it mm-hmm. looked like to me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice way to put it, yeah.
A medical book of what?
Kells, the book of Kells. It's with the manuscripts from, the monks of Iona, saved this.
It was a copy of
the Bible. Really beautifully done. It's kept in Trinity College now. Mm-hmm. It's got those same mm-hmm. kind of illustrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what your work reminded me of.
Yeah,
same
yeah my books are quite a bit later than that, but still part of the larger kind of body of illustrated manuscripts that we have, yeah.
I see.
Well, we invited you today because we want to talk to you about the OSU Center for the Humanities, which you direct.
Yes.
Tell us, what is the OSU Center for the Humanities and a little bit about its backstory and
mm-hmm.
its mission.
Mm-hmm. So the Center for the Humanities is about 2 years old now. It was established on kind of the groundwork that was laid by a number of previous humanities initiatives that we've been working on since about 2016. So it's kind of been a slow incremental building of the center. We now have an office in a building on campus, too. So we have a real space. It's weird to have a center without a place.
Building,
it's kind
right.
of then it is just like a conceptual center, right? So we have an actual center now, which is exciting. But the goal of the center is really sort of twofold. One is to promote and bring attention to the amazing research being done in the humanities by faculty at OSU and also students and other groups on campus that are kind of supporting research in the humanities fields. And then additionally, we are interested in fostering new interdisciplinary research in the humanities. It's grounded in the humanities, but brings in conversation with a lot of other different disciplines. So we are, I think, partly doing that because we think interdisciplinary research is really exciting and that the humanities have a lot to offer to those kinds of projects, but also to make a bigger kind of point, I think, on campus and beyond, that the humanities have a lot to bring to many of the, you know, sort of grand challenges that OSU and, frankly, the world is kind of grappling with right now. So to really assert the value of the humanities and humanities approaches and thinking to things that are happening on campus where we don't see humanists being kind of part of the conversation yet. And so, you know, mostly just kind of making things more visible.
Awesome.
So tell us, what are some current projects that the center is supporting or spearheading?
Right. So because we're new, we're still sort of developing some of these programs. But I would say that we're kind of focused right now on sort of three different prongs, maybe. One is we do programming. So we bring in speakers from outside. We have kind of a regular speaker series. We collaborate with other programs and departments on campus to bring in speakers or put together workshops or bring conversations to the faculty and other people on campus. We have been developing some new initiatives, so this is kind of the second prong, some new initiatives to think about how we can better support undergrad research in the arts and humanities.
Yeah. Nice.
And so we have a couple of new things that we're doing related to that. And then something that I know Andrew is familiar with. We also have are in our current third year of a program that is technically called the Humanities Research Group Fellowship Program. And so that's sort of the main program of our center.
Gotcha.
Something that we're really proud of that we think is really innovative is this new research program that focuses on interdisciplinary research specifically.
So that leads me to my next question. You know, you talked about interdisciplinary research and bringing people together. Can you articulate a little bit, what sort of researchers do you want to work with on campus?
Yeah, absolutely. We want to work with everybody on campus. I know that's maybe too simple of an answer, but I think we're really interested in bringing people from all of the different units and colleges and offices on campus to come to our table and think collaboratively about topics that are grounded in the humanities. So that includes faculty from any college on campus. That includes staff. We're especially excited to have staff that have a kind of research component of their position be involved. So that could be somebody from a research center, that could be somebody from the library, and then also graduate students are part of the fellowship program. So we try to reach as many people as possible in as many fields as possible, and anyone and everyone is welcome to apply to our program.
Mm-hmm. And you bring in scientific and more positivist disciplines too, in terms of fellows who go in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would say, so we haven't quite talked about the kind of structure of the fellowship program, but we bring in 9 fellows each year, 3
right.
people in each group, and then the groups are focused around these very broad topics. So health humanities, environmental humanities, and our third one this year is justice and peace studies. And so we are thinking about, you know, kind of putting together humanities scholars with people in other fields who have expressed an interest both in interdisciplinary work and in that topic. So it's all about sort of how you present yourself in the application to find a home in one of these groups. But we always do try to have at least one, if not two, people in each group from a humanities discipline so that there's still someone kind of grounding it in those methods, but that we're bringing in the perspectives and the skill set and the questions that come from other disciplines as well. So we've had just in the last 3 years, a wide range of scholars, including people from some of the health disciplines, from psychology, from sociology, from, a wide range of different disciplines, as well as the ones that are kind of traditionally housed in humanities departments.
And Jennifer, can I ask you maybe for folks that are coming from, you know, maybe more of like a hard science background to maybe describe a little bit by like, what do you mean when about problem framing around environmental humanities? Can you talk a little bit more about like what that looks like? What exactly does that mean?
It means a lot of different things. And that's and because it's such a broad topic, the goal is to allow a lot of flexibility for the groups once they get going. And so if we were really specialized, we know that that would prevent a wider number of people from participating. And it also wouldn't allow us to let the three fellows in that group kind of develop an idea once they come together. So we're getting kind of general interest from people to get into the program. And then once they're in the program, they spend the year really developing a new project that would only exist because those three brains are working on it together. And so it's really hard to anticipate what that project would be. We want there to be a lot of flexibility. But I think something for like the environmental humanities, I mean, that could range from, you know, kind of traditional types of work that are done in an environmental studies program, and we have had fellows who are from OSU's environmental studies program, but also it could deal with, you know, kind of food justice, or it can deal with climate change, or it can deal with kind of relationships of communities to their landscapes. It could be such a wide, wide range of topics. And so the whole point of picking a very large topic like that is to allow people to find different ways in. I think by including humanities in the title, we're wanting to make sure that people are grounding their projects in some of the kind of methods, approaches, ways of thinking that the humanities represent. So that that looks different depending on kind of what departments disciplines are coming together. But I think that one of the ways that you could think about that is just is sort of the types of questions that you're asking in the material and thinking about how, you know, kind of history and literature and the arts can inform us and give us kind of the groundwork for exploring these problems and questions.
That's a beautiful answer. I was talking to a person that was looking at, Andrew and I were just talking about it. We have a new visiting scholar in that's looking at environmental change, climate crisis, talking about how do we get people to recognize this. And one of the conversations we had was it's narrative, it's myth. Mm-hmm. It's like some of these broader, you know, bringing in these very human elements into that storytelling.
So, absolutely. Yeah, and we have a lot of scholars on campus who are coming from literature, film, history, philosophy, religious studies, languages, who are thinking about these questions in their own work. But what happens when you bring a group of people who don't already know each other together? How can you bring your own questions and kind of preconceived ideas about the topic and have them expanded by having conversations with the two other people in your group?
Fantastic.
Now, just speaking to the audience, which is primarily internal OSU faculty, what are the benefits of being chosen as a fellow in your center?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, there's some actual benefits. You get $3,000.
Okay, that's nice.
That's right.
So, that's a good one.
Just say it.
You know,
yes.
So it is a you know, a kind of a grant, a relatively small one, perhaps compared to some disciplines, but it's at least an acknowledgement that we are asking you to do something with the commitment that you've made. So we're asking you to step aside potentially from some other projects so that you dedicate the time needed to have these conversations. And so but you can really do whatever you want with that money. So it's not, you don't have to use that money for the project that your group develops. It is just yours to say, we acknowledge that we're asking time of you, and this is kind of, in some ways, sort of the payment, if you will, of that time.
And you have the option to get it as salary or get it as
research funds, funding. So you can use it to go do research travel or attend a conference or something like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a huge
part. So there's
a lot
of flexibility. Nice. So that, so there's that benefit. But then I think there's the less tangible benefits, which is, this isn't a program that's going to be appealing to everybody. Not everybody wants to work across disciplines in this way. But I think if you are interested in finding people who have shared interests and who like thinking creatively, this is a great opportunity to find those other people. And the whole point being that it's, especially on a kind of siloed campus like ours, it's really hard to find people outside of the circles that you move in. And so, in some ways, this is a structured way to create encounters that are really hard to happen just kind of by chance, right?
Yeah. I think that's so neat, too. And one of the reasons I applied was, my neighbor, Dr. Rosemary Avance, had been a fellow, and I'd watched her go through it, and I was like, I want to meet people out of my department. I go to my building, and then I go home. That's my life. That's what I do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. I think that was a really appealing part of it.
Yeah, and I think, even if the particular projects that people work on don't move forward in the way that they hoped or they kind of fizzle out, there's kind of an infinite potential for those relationships that you develop with your small group to grow out into other kinds of relationships. So 2 years later, someone's looking for someone in media studies and someone in your group is like, well, I know Andrew, I'll put them in touch. So there's a way in which these are the center of a lot of prongs that go out into the future years to connect with other kinds of people or to get invited to a conference that you wouldn't have ever gone to or, something kind of along those lines. And so I think also our goal is just to foster those relationships, and then what happens with those relationships is going to be different for everybody.
It really
does. We're excited about that.
Well, I'm excited to hear about it. I mean, it does become a catalyst for change because, as you say, each year you're bringing in, you said, 9 people, right? Like the relationships over time, think about how that compounds the network that gets built, 5-10 years from now, those connections are still going to be there. Those projects are still going to be building. So what an awesome legacy that you've already started.
I hope so. Yeah.
So we're getting towards the end of the interview, but I do want to ask you, what are some examples of some projects your fellows have done that you felt were innovative or impressive in your opinion?
Yeah. Well, I mean, on some level, I think that they all have really great potential.
Of course.
And I've been really excited about every one of them. But I have a couple that I was going to mention today. I think the first one I wanted to talk about is our group that was focused on nonviolence and peace studies last year. They are working on building on a peace-building archive of OSU's response to 9/11. So 9/11's 25th anniversary is coming up. Mm-hmm. And this group eventually settled on a project where they're working through the Ocali and different archives on campus to kind of study what the response, what kind of things were happening on campus as a result of this, kind of cataclysmic event. And they're going to be working with undergraduates to do some of that research. They got an ORCA grant, for those of you in CAS who know what this is, but it's an opportunity to bring a work study student onto a research project. And so they've brought in some students to work on this project, and they're going to be kind of doing a variety of different projects that include maybe some oral histories, and also kind of putting together their own archive of what OSU's response was as a way to kind of rethink how the campus kind of dealt with this issue at its anniversary, but then also kind of thinking more broadly about protests and activism today on campus and kind of how this past legacy at OSU can give us insights into how we approach these things today. So I think that is a really exciting project because it's grounded in the local, it involves students, it's kind of pertinent to everyone who's on campus.
Sure.
And so I'm really excited to see where that project takes
And
takes
we
them.
We forget that, those students didn't experience that event, the students
exactly.
that we have now, right? So they'll actually get some insight into that moment in our campus history.
Yeah, for sure. And then another group that I think is doing really impressive work was our Health Humanities group from a couple of years ago, who was working on a project called Re-envisioning Community-Engaged Healing for Black Women. And they were really interesting in terms of how they were approaching using the different disciplines that they represented to kind of address real-world problems and to very much connect to community engaged research. And yet they were also presenting this work in a number of different conferences. They won conference awards.
Nice.
They got one of the app building awards to make an app connected to their project.
Cool.
You know, and so there's some really interesting things that they've done with their project, but also just like the core of its goals was so important. Mm. And so I think that's another project that I really am excited and continue to be excited where they take it.
How can people apply to your program?
Mm.
Yes. So we have an annual application process. Usually the application is posted in January, so early in the spring semester. I think probably the due date's early March, somewhere in there.
Okay.
And so, you know, pay attention to our website. If you want to be on our newsletter that we send out every month, sometimes a couple a month, that will have an announcement in that newsletter as well. You can send me an email if you want to get added to the newsletter, or you can go to our website and find information about that. And then usually we also have an information session, just like a Zoom virtual meeting, somewhere between the announcement of the application and when they're due, so that people can ask any questions or find out more about the program. So if anyone has questions about that, they can always just contact me, but you can also keep an eye out for that info session, which will be at some point probably in February.
Fantastic. And we'll be sure to share the link to your website and your email address, if that's okay with you.
That'd be great.
And
yeah.
The notes to this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds great. Thank
and
you.
So many people talk about, you know, starting a center and they have that idea for it. The fact that you have brought this into fruition, that you are bringing this here on OSU's campus and making that kind of difference, building those networks, I just think is fantastic and should be celebrated. So thanks for coming on. All right, we are here with Braden Smith, Pistol Pete number 98. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, Braden, well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
For sure. So I'm a senior from Altus, Oklahoma, double majoring in agribusiness, pre-law, and finance. Kind of some things that I've, you know, looking forward to doing. My future life is, you know, I want to stay here, love OSU, go Pokes, get my 4+1, or start the 4+1 program with Spears, try to get my master's in quantitative finance. And then from there, either go on to wealth management or kind of see how I like that aspect of things, maybe go on to law school. And if you grew up on a small farm in southwest Oklahoma, had a big cattle background on both sides of the family. So grew up around cattle, livestock industry, and agriculture. So that's a big part of me, a big part of my personality, and kind of something I want to do to get back to my roots at some point. So
that's wow. A lot.
A lot of stuff going
yeah.
on there.
Pistol Pete, MBA. Yeah. No, not an MBA.
Masters.
Wealth management? Well, you know, I'd love to manage somebody's wealth, right?
Like, yeah.
wouldn't know anything about that. So what inspired you to become Pistol Pete? How'd you get into becoming Pistol Pete? Can you tell us a little
for
bit?
For sure. Yeah, that's what I've been asked a lot, actually. So I'm a member of Alpha Gamma Rho. So out of the eight past Pistol Petes, five of them, including myself, have all been members of AGR. And those were all guys that I've got to meet and interact with while being in-house. And kind of got to follow them around a little bit. And once I met the first Pistol Pete, whenever I came in as a freshman, Michael Albright, very first one I ever met, he kind of gave me a little bit of insight into it. And then my sophomore year, I did a year on the Spirit Rider team, took care of Bullet, did some things on that front, got to kind of see what all goes into, you know, making a game day run efficiently. There's a lot of moving parts on game days. And then, you know, getting to be in the tunnel, a lot of the job with Bullet is, you know, you're in the tunnel just watching, waiting for the game. And so I got to talk with the other Pistol Petes at that time, Traber Smithson, Cooper Price, and got to kind of gather what all they do in more details. Pete, not only for game days, but certain appearances. And that's when I was like, you know, this sounds like a lot of fun. Not only fun, but humbling at the same time, just getting to be, you know, you're putting a smile on people's faces, you're making their day almost 99% of the time. I mean, it's... And getting to hear that side of things sounded like something I was truly drawn to. And so then we did a little tryout process in April, go in and kind of come up to it. And they do a little info session. And then you roll into interviews. And in these interviews, it's basically they're asking stuff about your background, trying to get to know more about you. Because it's not only how you portray yourself as Pistol Pete, but also how you are outside of the head.
Sure, yeah.
And so that's half the job is being Pete outside of the head. And mm-hmm. so they want to be able to judge your character, and then you do a little bit of a run-through on kind of some scenarios, so you get a chance to put on the head, and they kind of, you know, ask you, you know, show us your walk. And they like to make it fun, too. I never forget whenever they the judges, which it's judged by past Pistol Pete alums, they asked me to put on the head and walk to the wall as slow as I can, and then turn around and walk back as fast as I can. But then whenever I turned around, there's one of the judges simulating somebody, you know, potentially being blind that, you know, wouldn't see me coming that way. And so I turned and he's right there. And so then simulates, you know, like me running into him. It's like, Pete, what are you going to do? And so it's just kind of being able to think on your feet, a lot of stuff like that. And here I am today. I think I invoiced appearance number 120 something yesterday.
Wow.
So,
wow.
It's been a busy run so far.
So there's like a brotherhood, the way you talk about it, you know the guys that have gone through it before. So talk a little bit about like the fraternity of Pete, as it were.
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what it is. We always describe it all as a small little fraternity within itself. It's a very select group of individuals. I'm the 98th Pistol Pete, which means that there's been 98 Petes before, 97 Petes before me. And out of that group, it's, you know, everybody gets to know each other. We do have our own alumni association chapter. So there's the Pistol Pete alumni, and we, you know, got our own board of directors. We do, and like, if any of you guys were at the Frank Eaton statue,
seen it.
Whenever that came up on the right side of the stage, you could see all the Pistol Pete alums there in their white shirts, Pistol Pete alumni. And it's really neat when everybody gets together, especially whenever I first got it. I'll never forget that whenever I was given my spurs and my badge. And, you know, it's like I'd known these guys for 10, 20 years, mm-hmm. what it felt like. And everybody's super welcoming and just right out the gate, because, you know, you share the same experiences and everybody's got their own spin on it. You know, some things that they did, some tips and tricks and kind of little quirks in a sense on like sure. what they add to it. And so it's always good and neat to kind of get to talk to all of them and figure out what they do and kind of add stuff to it. But it's a constant brotherhood. I see a Pete alum at least once, maybe every other week.
Wow.
But I see him a lot, just random places. So
you know who each other are, but no one else does.
Yeah, yeah. And it reminds me of those Heisman House commercials. There's like this brotherhood of Heisman Trophy winners. That's what it just
well,
described.
We did
like
the Heisman House commercials this summer. Pete did.
Oh, yeah.
So that was
that's
fun.
Right.
That was
right.
a lot of fun.
So let me ask you this. Okay, so you're on the football field. It is 110 degrees out there. You're in the helmet. You've been dancing around. It's tough. Maybe we're not playing so good. What is the temperature like inside that helmet?
Well, 110 degrees sounds like a little bit of a winter break on the field lately. Not this last game. I was curious to know what it was last game. But two home games ago, somebody measured the heat on the field and came in at 150.
Wow.
So inside the helmet,
Inside the helmet is probably 160-ish. I want to say it adds 10 or 15 degrees. But it honestly, not too bad. Like it sounds bad, but you kind of just block it out, especially when you're taking it all in, and like day before game days especially. I mean, I like to hydrate a lot.
Sure,
We do that constantly. Just
do you have any like pregame rituals for yourself that you do to like psych yourself up before you go into an event to really be Pete?
Not really, in a sense. It's funny. A lot of my friends that, you know, have known me forever, and then they'll go to an appearance that I'm at and they'll see me in the head. It's like they describe it as seeing a whole different person. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of just like the second you put on the head, what I always, like the only thing I really always do is like if I'm walking out the door, I'll just give it two claps and go. If it's a game day, I always go to Sonic, get an ultimate meat and cheese burrito beforehand, and then go to the game.
Yeah, nice plug for Sonic, too.
Yeah, it is,
okay.
Right? Ever have any kind of weird wardrobe malfunction with the costume? Did you ever like drop the pistol or anything crazy like that ever happen? Just curious.
Trying to think.
I want to ask about the pistol, though.
Okay.
It's loaded with blanks. Who's in charge of loading it with blanks?
So we get all of our ammunition through the police department.
Okay.
So Captain Chandler over there at the police department, we get all of, like, go to him, like, hey, we need new shotgun blanks, new pistol blanks. He gets us hooked up. The only malfunction I can think of was the shotgun. So normally, when we shoot it, kind of just drop it off to the side.
Sure.
Well, I shot at a game, drop it off to the side, and the stock kind of chipped off. And so, but it was a blessing within itself. Took it to Louth and Gunworks just outside of town.
Okay.
And they did some marvelous work to it. I mean, it is unreal. It's amazing. We'll be back taking stuff back to them for years to come.
Nice. Fantastic. All right. So, well, Andrew, do you have any other questions before we jump into our odd joke segment?
So you're the 90th Pistol Pete. Have all 90th. Pistol Petes been men?
Yes, actually.
Everyone.
Yep. And it's funny. I met at an appearance a lady that came up to me and said that she'd tried out for, or her roommate had tried out for, which I'd never heard of before, to be honest. But I've had people ask, like, can girls do it? Like, yes, anybody can try out for it. So.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Well, I guess the last question I have, any cool perks about being Pistol Pete that people wouldn't regularly know of that you can talk about?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can call it a perk. I think it's a huge perk. This is kind of twofold, ties into each other. But the unique thing about the way Oklahoma State does their Pistol Petes and their mascots is that, you know, we can do things like this, like a podcast, like we do, like speaking events and stuff. So, like, it's public. Mm-hmm. Like, people know who it is. But so with that, we are also able to, like, hide our identities. Like, when we went to the Heisman House commercial, one of the coolest things and perks that I think is being able to meet, greet, and talk with people wherever you go at all these appearances. Like, I've met probably at this point at least 1,000 people through appearances.
Wow.
I mean, when we did the Heisman House commercial, they put us up in the Four Seasons. We got to meet some of the guys, the past Heisman winners there. I'll never forget whenever we, the other Pistol Pete, Cooper Hamilton, and I, we go downstairs to go get something to eat. We're just going to go eat in the hotel lobby, and there Mark Ingram, nice. Former Heisman winners, right there on the first floor. And we see him, like, because we talked to him earlier that day and met him at the Heisman House. Like, what are you doing? He's like, I just got some food, ordered to the hotel. And so we went to go walk over to the restaurant, and he's falling behind us. Like, you care if I eat with him? We're like, yeah, of course. Like, come on. So, I mean, I think the coolest perk is just getting to meet people and, you know, get to learn more about them and kind of just see what their aspect is or their outlook on Pistol Pete is. And so
nice. That's great. I actually had Mark Ingram in a class back in the day, so that's kind of fun. Full circle.
All right, you ready for odd jokes?
Let's go into odd jokes. So this segment, we're just going to be asking you kind of some questions here. First one I've got for you.
Well, just, let's get some clarity here.
First
thing you need to know, these are bad jokes.
Okay.
These are not good jokes.
Terrible.
Okay. But we want to know, you're a member of the generation known as Z, correct? Gen Z.
Should be.
You should be. Yeah, think you are. Okay. Yeah. We want to know if Gen Z will laugh at these bad jokes.
Okay.
So, Sky's going to give you the bad joke, and then no pressure. We'll see if you laugh.
Yeah, no pressure. So, what is faster, a cheetah or a pizza cuss?
Cheetah.
Okay. Well, the idea behind this one is, what's a pizza cuss? About $10 at a bakery.
Nice.
Yeah, all right. How about this one? What do you call a boomerang that doesn't come back?
I've heard this one. I couldn't tell you.
Just a stick.
That's one of those ones that makes you mad that you didn't know about it.
Yeah, mine have bombed so far. Andrew, you got any, or do you want me to keep rolling with mine?
You keep going.
All right. What do you call a fake noodle?
Stick.
An impasta.
Nice. That's my favorite one so far.
Okay, all right. For Halloween, why did the scarecrow become a successful motivational speaker?
It was scared.
He was outstanding in his field.
No. I like it. That's a good one.
I think we got 2 out of 4on that one.
Yeah, 2 out of 4. Yeah, right?
I'll give it 2 out of 4. 2 out of 4. The first one's a warm-up.
Yeah.
I like the stick one, though. That was a good one.
Well, Braden, thanks for coming in.
Yeah,
Pistol
no
Pete
problem.
Number 98.
Yes,
such
sir.
A pleasure to talk to you. Excellent representative of both the legacy of Pistol Pete, but also our university. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming by.
Anytime.
Well, that's all we have for this episode of The Odd Fellows. We'll see you next time.